smart eye for business and value, long-term value generation. If you can combine those two, you really get magic.
The diversity you have on a team is always, it's great, right? If everybody was the same person, you're like, oh my God.
big fan of diversity for sure.
Yeah.
One I mentioned already is transparency and trust. That's huge for me in a leader. I believe someone who has vision and can take us to another place, right? We're here, we want to go there, and here's how we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Can do that without, you know, apologies for the language, but without being an asshole.
Sometimes it feels like a container ship, right? It's like, oh, yeah. You need approval for this, and then right, going up, going down.
Absolutely. And yet some of the constraints are meaningful. They're there for a reason.
Yeah.
Right. You kind of have to wield your power carefully.
Some leaders build alignment by controlling every detail, and others build alignment by trusting first. In technical, fast-moving environments, trust is not a nice to have. It directly impacts how teams execute, communicate, and work across functions and regions. Welcome to Leadership Manufacturing Podcast, where we focus on building the next generation of leaders across electronics manufacturing and supply chain. I'm your host, Sanna Wending. I'm an engineer. I'm a strategic leader focused on connecting technology, people, and leadership to drive real progress. Each episode delivers practical, people-first leadership insights from executives and industry leaders who knows what it takes to lead in complex technical environments. In today's episode, I'm joined by Chris Lanier. He's the Manager Director for the Americas at Ixign. And Chris has built and scaled global teams across enterprise software, IoT, embedded system, and cybersecurity. In this conversation, we talk about what trust really looks like in practice, how to lead global teams without confusion, and how to balance structure with flexibility as organizations grow. If you lead in manufacturing, electronics, or supply chain, this is a conversation you can apply immediately. Let's jump in. Thanks for tuning in to Leadership Manufacturing Podcast. I'm excited for everybody listening today. I want to welcome Chris Lanier. He's the Managing Director for the Americas at Ixign. So welcome, Chris. I'm excited to have you here today.
Thanks, Anna. I'm really looking forward to our time together.
Yeah, me too. So I always love to start with, like, what's the passion, you know, for the industry that you're in? So share a little bit, you know, what's your passion?
Yeah, I love the question. you know, I was at Microsoft for 20 years before I came to Ixign. And it was there, really, that I found my passion for connected devices. I mean, kind of as a tech nerd, I always loved that piece of it. But
yeah,
business person, I grew to love the business outcomes, the really interesting use cases that kind of the world of IoT brought to the table. Ever since I've been in that place, I get to do really new, interesting projects every day almost. Yeah. And so engaging with really innovative business models that are based on connected devices and the telemetry that you can get from those devices and the decisions that you can reason over, or the data that you get that you can reason over and decisions you can make. I love all of that. So super passionate about that space in general.
Oh, I can hear it and I can see it. So you're built, as you just said, right? Because you have, like, engineering and the technology and the business. So if we're, like, zooming in on the leadership, right? So what have shaped the approach you have to leadership when you have this like technical industries?
Several things. I've worked for some really, really strong leaders in my time at various companies that I've been in. And I would say generally, you know, I love to be in the tech space. I also really believe that if there's not value that you're generating, then, you know, you can make as cool of a toy as you want or as interesting of a technical device, but if it's not driving value, it doesn't go anywhere for long at least.
Yeah.
So kind of mixing technical leadership and technical competence with a really strong kind of smart eye for business and value, long-term value generation. If you can combine those two, you really get magic. And so as a leader, I try to do that. And I also tried to bring members onto my team that can not only do that themselves, but do it in a slightly different way than I do, so that I get a more clear picture. We collectively get a more clear picture around where that journey can take us, both and from a business value perspective.
Yeah, and being open-minded, right, I think, as well. Yeah, the diversity you have on a team is always, it's great, right? If everybody was the same person, you're like, oh my God.
big fan of diversity, for sure.
Yeah. So what about, I want to hear a little bit about, because you've been in large organizations, right? And also like in smaller, that like fast-moving companies. So is there any lessons or any learnings, right? Of, is there anything different or is it just how you navigate it?
There's real differences. There's real differences, and probably none that I would espouse here that are surprising to very many people.
Yeah.
But definitely some real differences. I did the startup thing early in my career for a couple of years, and I thought, while I enjoyed the autonomy and the quick pace and the ability to make fast decisions and some of those things, I really missed having access to resources. It was a struggle to sell when you didn't have much of a name in a market. Yeah. So I was like, I don't think I want to do that again. So I went to big companies and I did that for a while. And while I loved some of the things that I missed at the startup, I absolutely missed the autonomy and the ability to make fast decisions. And so, I'm excited to be at Exane now, where it's a bit of both. I mean, they're certainly not a massive company yet, but they've got a lot of resourcing. They've done a fantastic job in raising capital because they have some strong technology and some amazing tech ideas. And so that gives us access to resourcing that is pretty substantial. So it's been an interesting navigation.
Yeah. And you learn so much from it, right? Because I think when you are in a big organization, I've been there as well, is sometimes it feels like a container ship, right? It's like, you need approval for this, and then, right, going up, going down.
Absolutely. And yet some of the constraints are meaningful. They're there for a reason.
Yeah.
Right. And so you do have to wield your power carefully in a smaller company, right? Because there's often not as many constraints and guardrails, if you will, you can make mistakes that are really significant. So I think it's great to have the flexibility, the freedom, and the autonomy, but you'd have to be a bit more careful in my experience.
Yeah. And also with your experience, I think because you've been in these different sizes of organizations, right, it just helps you even more to navigate in this role where you are right now, because you tried or learned, right?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I've tried to learn along the way. And absolutely, there's some things from smaller companies that I've tried to bring to bigger ones, and vice versa.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
It's like a mentorship, right? It's both ways, and you learn so much from it. Cool. Okay, so what about, so if we talk about leadership skills, so if you want to build trust and have alignment across teams, and I think, you know, you do that even, you know, what size of organizations you have.
Right.
What skills matters the most?
Hard to say which ones matter the most. I know the ones that most often resonate with me when I have other leaders and that I try to emulate, and ones that in some cases come easiest for me as well. I'm a big believer in transparency, where you can be transparent, you know, as much transparency as possible.
Yeah.
So some leaders hold back as a natural tendency. I probably lean the other direction. And I've always appreciated that about my leaders who have done that way. It implies trust to me as someone under the leader, and it implies trust from me to someone who is in my organization when I'm a little risky on the transparency, right? So that's always been a big one. What else? I like to assume positive intent. So you get my trust out of the gates, you have to mess it up for me not to trust you.
Oh, that's, you're the same there. Yes.
Yeah, that's risky. That is risky, right? But that's how I want to be treated.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a big one for me.
Yeah.
And so I try to give a lot of freedom with inspection, of course. Yeah. You know, keep an eye on things, but you know, Bill Gates, I attribute this quote to him. I don't know if I've actually seen it, but I've heard people attribute it to him.
Yeah.
Talked about, you know, working hard to hire people smarter than himself, which is a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
You're Bill Gates. I would broaden it a little bit to say, back to your leadership question, I try to hire folks who are very bright. Maybe in every case who don't know more than I do, but certainly have the capacity to really think large and big and creatively, and if I can, who know more about certain things than I do, so that I can learn from them.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can learn from me, and we can collaborate to
And have that team dynamic, right? But I think even though if you hire somebody, right, you can't be an expert in everything. Let's just be honest, right?
Yeah.
But of course you can have knowledge, right? You can have the strategic view on things. But if you know you have a gap or you need this position filled in your team, right? Finding that expert, so then that's going to be the perfect match, right? I think that's how I see it.
I agree with you. Yeah.
I agree with you. But so back to, I really like what you're saying, giving the freedom first, or just saying the trust, not the freedom, but the trust, right? And then saying, if you break some of this trust, right? If there's too much of, going over that line or something, or then you're going to grab and get a little bit more attached and saying, okay, what's happening and stuff like that. But I think the approach of trusting first and then have that business relationship and that teamwork, everything just grow from there, is the best foundation.
I agree.
Yeah.
And, I would add some of that is a stage of career kind of thing. For example, earlier in my career, when I was a young manager hiring like very first time people in a role.
Yeah.
Of course I needed to have more oversight in those scenarios. Where I am now, I'm hiring, for the most part, I'm hiring senior people.
Yeah.
Who have done something like what I'm asking them to do now before. I'm often paying a lot of money to get this person. And why would I intentionally not get someone who I want to trust at the gates?
No, it's that's a trade, right? That's also the whole onboarding where you can be like, oh my God, it takes so long. But at a certain time, you can see how much, if you did a proper onboarding, right, that just lift everything off your shoulders at that point where this person can just fly from there. And the more senior or what you need of expert, right, is also giving you that jump to that level of where you want to be. So it's, and nothing is free. So come on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said.
So you work with global teams, right? You have offices in Italy, in Asia, and Europe, right? Italy is in Europe, right? But global teams often work differently across, the cultures and also the regions. So what have you learned to communicate effectively?
I think it's a mix, right? I think at some level, we would hope that our leadership would kind of imbue the organization with some hooks, some really North Stars from a culture perspective. And I believe that is the case, right? And so we are fortunate. And it's one of the reasons I came to Exane. As I spoke to the C-suite and when I was interviewing, I was careful. I wanted to go to a place where I was good with the culture.
Yeah.
And I love our CEO. He talks about how we do very important work, very serious work.
Yeah.
That, has a massive impact. And yet we try not to take ourselves personally too seriously.
Yeah.
He told me that within the first 10 minutes of meeting. And that was really, it took me off my guard, I think, in a good way. And I believe it's true. So something like that, I think, can pervade the entire global company, right? And we can have a common vocabulary about some of the culture points that are really common for all of us.
Yeah.
At the same time, you're right. I mean, the way business is done in Taipei is quite different than the way it's done in the United States, and often different than the way it's done in Europe.
Yeah.
And that goes not only for customer and partner interaction, but intercompany interaction. This is something, when I started becoming kind of a global business person in 2010, so 15 years ago, was a big learning curve for me.
Yeah.
And something that I'm incredibly grateful for. I was at Microsoft at the time, and I had the opportunity, and I very much look at it that way, to hire teams across 5 or 6 countries in Europe, across 4 or 5 countries in Asia, of course, in the United States and even South America, the Americas in general.
Yeah.
So I got the opportunity to really do at least a double click on a variety of cultures around the world. And it has helped me for sure.
Yeah.
Interacting with team members that are in those other cultures. Okay. I'm not perfect at it, of course, but what a joy to learn about these other cultures. When I talk about cultures there, it's actual like culture, where you're from,
yeah.
right? Less company culture and more
yeah.
culture of origin.
Yeah.
And so where those meet is always a really fun place to explore. And I think we do a really good job at that at Exane. You know, our CEO, he was born, I believe, in Germany, grew up in Germany. Now, I mean, he is an Italian. He lives in Italy.
Yeah.
He's had quite a bit of global experience himself and has set the company up as a global company right out of the gates. And he's worked hard to make it a good common cultural experience across all of our offices. Awesome. So, yeah,
I like it. Yeah. Yeah. And I think also just with the different cultures, right? If you also we can meet in person, right?
Yes.
Gives you so much. It's like feeding you with energy. That's how I see it. Because if you can bring people together and they can see each other and have that lunch or that dinner or something that is not typical work, you bond and you talk about culture, or you talk about tradition, or you talk about your family, right? Or you talk about your hobbies. That connects you. So then I always see like it gives you so much more energy the next couple of months. So when you do meet and need to have like if it's that email, right? Or is that Teams call or Zoom call or whatever it is, right? It's so much more just it's easier because you're like, oh, we met, right? You actually know you have legs, right?
It's so funny you bring this up. A quick story. I was
having
a conversation with my wife just today. Some 6 or 7 hours ago, I had a call with a colleague in Italy who I had spoken to a couple of times. He's on our marketing team.
Yeah.
And the last time I spent any real time with him was at our company offsite in Tuscany. It's not so bad when you work
for us. That's not bad.
And all our entire company was there. And I ended up sharing a car with him on the ride back to Rome. So 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So it really got to, we talked film, we talked art, we talked music, and we talked business too, of course.
Yeah.
But the conversation I had with him this morning was so much richer than it would have been if I hadn't had that. So it's a great example of what you're describing. And I totally agree.
Yeah. But it's also when you do this, right? Because it touches company culture, it touches so many things, but it also touching the trust, right? Because somebody is going to open up and saying, hey, this is, you know, this is me, right? Or this is my family, or this is what, you know, don't laugh at my at my hobby, right? So it's building to it, but it's so important, I think, that every company actually spend the time, the resources, the money, right? It's an investment when they can have these kind of like bring everybody together because it's going to boost so much. So
100%. Very much agree with you.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about cybersecurity, right? Because we want to know a little bit more about the company. So I want to know, because we see it all over, right? And cybersecurity is just becoming a much higher priority in manufacturing and also in IoT. So what should leaders, what is it that they need to understand about the risk and the responsibility now that we have all these connected devices and especially also, right, electronics industry?
Yeah. Big topic. We could spend many hours just talking about this, but maybe in broad strokes, I would say a couple of things. One, you know, we've done a really good job, I think, from a cybersecurity perspective, just broadly across kind of the IT world.
Yeah.
At the centralized IT data center cloud level, we're pretty good there. Those places, you know, where much of our corporate data is today on the Microsoft cloud or an Amazon cloud or Google cloud or the cloud of your choice, you know, those places are highly secured physically.
Yeah.
And they have there's great technology out there for securing, you know, the kind of the centralized network security that most companies rely on to protect their assets. It's a much more difficult job when you talk about securing. You take those IT assets and you push them out and you scatter them across thousands, millions, hundreds of millions of devices, and all of a sudden a centralized security model doesn't it's necessary but it's not sufficient, right? It doesn't protect each one of those devices. So you must be thinking about a distributed security model. Yeah. And that's what Exane is absolutely focused on doing. We talk about kind of creating the immune system for the digital world. Yeah. And that's the way we think about it, right? When you think about all these discrete data points that are surface areas for attack, we want to help, and we are helping customers and partners secure those endpoints,
yeah,
such that you are protecting, you know, a massive surface area from attack.
Yeah. I'm pausing the show because I want to make sure that you follow the show or subscribe, or you've joined me on YouTube, or maybe just check out the website. So search for Leadership in Manufacturing. This is no fluff. This is inside inspiration that you need to grow, lead, and make an impact as a leader. So see you online. Back to the show.
Yeah. So I would say if you are a company that is either building and or deploying devices that are outside of your centralized network, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
And it's not just me saying that, right? Especially if you look at the European Union, the regulatory requirements around the Cyber Resilience Act, the Radio yeah. Equipment Directive, these are just a couple, there are more. They kind of emphasize the fact that there are real dangers and real economic loss associated with attacks across these device types. And so if you're building or deploying devices outside your centralized network, you absolutely should be taking care to ensure their safety.
Yeah, no, and it's just like growing, right, as well. And I think just how many devices you have in your home, if I'm just looking at me as an end user, right, and then how it's connected. And it's just like, it's a whole ecosystem, right? Yes. Going outside, I went just to the ATM the other day, and normally, right, had to get some cash, right? And then it just will send, I don't want to print the paper, right? It was the receipt just saying, send it to my email. And then suddenly it said, I don't have your email. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That was like, boo, warning. You know, I was like, how can you forget it? I've been here like 10 years. I walked to the same ATM machine. Yeah. But it's just like, I don't know if it's habits, right? But with every these electronic devices and how things are communicating, we have to learn, right? To say, okay, is there something wrong here, right? And it's just another way of using your devices and living with your devices, right? But it's just different. But that was just my little moment.
Absolutely. And you know, it's we often inappropriately or incorrectly associate kind of the value of maybe an edge device or the size of an edge device. We correlate that with how much risk there is.
Yeah.
But that is illusory. It's not real. One of my favorite examples that I've given for years is, you know, an unnamed casino in Vegas.
Yeah.
They were compromised, and a bad actor gained access to their high roller database through a faulty thermometer that was in one of their really fancy fish tanks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just a tiny little thermometer, but it was connected to their network. It wasn't secured. Someone gained access to that device.
Yeah.
And through that device was able to worm into very, very sensitive data.
Yeah.
And so there's just kind of no device too small that doesn't need protecting, I guess.
It's the weakest link sometime. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Let's get back to some leadership skills, because I think it's so important that it's like continuous learning, right? That's one of my big, you know, just you have to learn because you don't want to hit that plateau.
Agreed.
And with your background as well, you've been, you know, you learned so much, but I want to ask you, what has the latest skill that you actually have learned?
Yeah, I would say it's a good question. If we're talking, should we keep it in the realm of business or is it just personal?
It can be anything you want.
Yeah. I mean, let me give you both. You know, I love building things, businesses and teams and approaches and go to markets from a corporate business perspective. It's things I'm passionate about, especially in the embedded edge IoT space, as I mentioned at the very beginning of this call.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, doing what I'm doing for Exane is kind of infused with lots of experience and lots of passion. But in other ways, it's also some new things for sure, right?
Yeah.
So managing an entire operation. I've always been part of, for the most part, been part of bigger companies where I might own a team or a business, but I'm not responsible for kind of everything that's going on in the company for a specific region. And that's really what is happening here. So I'm having the opportunity to learn much more deeply around things in the venture capital world, in the on the legal side of an operation, HR operations, things like that, that maybe I've bumped up against, but really having to have more ownership in is something new and something that I'm enjoying learning about for sure. On the personal side, I've kind of fallen in love with mountain climbing, believe it or not.
Nice.
And last year I summited Mount Rainier, which you can see right here in my picture.
Yeah.
Which is arguably the most difficult climb in the lower 48 of the United States. And was a ton of fun, and it's kind of ignited a passion of learning about the gear and all the safety requirements and of course getting in shape and all of that, and have more things planned in that space. So kind of physical, but also,
that's a lot to learn, right? Because it's not just,
I try to keep the personal and the professional.
That's good. Reality. And I'm sure as well, right? Because that's a good skill, right? Because it's also giving you or taking the time, right, to do mountain climbing, right? Because I think that's just it. And I'm sure that gives you, when we talked about the energy before, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you meet people, right, in the same way, I'm sure this is also give you some kind of energy when you come back and that kind of boost, right? And especially if you climb something like that tall, right? Then you're like, that's a huge accomplishment. So what's on your next list?
Actually, from a mountain climbing perspective, probably the next big one would be Kilimanjaro in Africa, which is interesting. Not that we should deep dive on this, but it's about 5,000 feet taller than Mount Rainier.
Yeah,
so that's pretty significant, but it's much less technical. So in some ways it's easier, in some ways it's more difficult.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun, and hoping to talk my wife to joining me in that adventure. So we'll see.
And then a satellite phone, right? Come on.
That's right. 2027. 2027 is that year.
That's the goal. Oh, that's nice. Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing the picture where you're like on the top there.
Fair enough.
Okay. Then rolling back to the business, because I asked, your new skill there. Is there any skill you want to learn if we're looking into 2026?
Maybe this sounds a little outdated. Maybe it's one of the reasons that you and I are talking. But one of the things that I feel like I have a lot of room to get better at is around my social media leadership.
Yeah.
Kind of my ability to kind of frame my own kind of professional brand in a more social way. I think I have a network of people who very much know who I am and kind of the value that I bring, what my skill set is. But doing a better job kind of spreading that via social media, as well as just, I think, having a bigger impact, because I think I can have a bigger impact than I want to. So exploring what that looks like. At the same time, I'm not a 30-year-old socialite. I never was. I never want to be, and never will be. But I think I can continue to learn how to do even a better job in that space. So that would be
and share your knowledge, right? And be that thought leader in your space. I think that's excellent, because it's about giving back as well. That's what I see with this podcast as well. It's giving back to the industry, because not everything I learn a lot when I have these interviews and listen, right? It's like, and I see it from another perspective where I'm like, oh my God, why didn't I see that? Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good thing. And that's a really, really good goal for 2026.
Yeah, thanks.
I think being a good leader, right, is difficult to say, what does it take? And everybody has a different angle to say, what does it take or make, to be a good leader. So I want to ask you, when you meet somebody, or for you to say, okay, this is how I want to become a good leader. But how do you, what's your definition of a good leader?
I think it's interesting because when I reflect on this question, I think of several good leaders that I've had the privilege to work with and for. And they're not all the same, of course, right? But are there some attributes that I think are pretty consistent? And I would a couple. One I mentioned already is transparency and trust. That's huge for me in a leader. I believe someone who has vision and can take us to another place, right? We're here, we want to go there, and here's how we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Can do that without, you know, apologies for the language, but without being an asshole.
Yeah.
Right? Someone who can do it with some humility to say, hey, I feel strongly about this. I definitely have vision. I know where I want to go. I know where we can go together. And yet, if something's not working, or if they really do need to hear feedback from someone else, that they're willing to.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite leaders that I worked for in my career, I got nominated to, we were doing this thing with all teams were giving feedback to their leader. Like the leader gives feedback to the team all the time. And I was responsible for giving feedback to this guy. And one of the things that we all loved about him was that he always had time for you. And he was never checking his phone. He was like, when you had him, you had him wholly. And that was one of everybody's favorite things.
Yeah.
The problem was he missed meetings all the time. Because if you had him first, if you were second in line, he probably didn't make your meeting because he was too busy talking to the first person. So it was like his superpower became his weakness in some cases.
Yeah.
So, but I gave him feedback and he totally took it and he got better at that. Right. I
mean,
So that's always been a big one for me too, kind of vision and confidence with humility.
Yeah.
So those would be.
I like that. No, I really like it. I like it. It's like also with the trait you just said, right? With that, you know, we're saying you're giving the full focus, but then you're missing the meeting because we're so used to everything is just like beeping, right? And now you need to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need like an old-fashioned analog clock.
Literally, it was the thing we loved most about him was also the thing that made
us
frustrated with him.
Yeah.
Depending on which particular side of the coin you were on at the moment.
Yeah. No. So, okay. So I like, because then you're like, you share, right? Saying, you know, this is the advice you gave. What about an advice you've received?
Ah.
Anything that stands out?
Yeah. I think, let me think about that one.
Yeah.
Advice that I've received. I mean, so I can give you an example of advice that I received that wasn't constructive advice, but it's advice that I've always used.
Yeah.
And that is from a hiring perspective. When I was an early manager, just learning to hire, you know, I had one of my mentors who was a fantastic leader say, hey, look for attitude and aptitude.
Yeah.
Don't always look for deep experience. Some experience is great, but if you can find a rock star who maybe doesn't have as much experience and you can help that person kind of guide them and then just set them free.
Yeah,
you're gonna be ahead of someone who's got a lot of experience but doesn't have a really powerful attitude to achieve and passion or attitude that you want, right? So that's been one.
Yeah.
Advice that I've given others. Sorry, I know you didn't ask that.
No, but that's okay. That's
think about it. Is you know, I think we can overplay the whole. If you had $1 million, what would you do? And even if you don't have $1 million, you could go do that thing.
Yeah.
I think we overplay that, right? We have to eat, right?
And
we have to do things that can provide for us. But at the same time, if you have the privilege to be able to kind of think about your life purpose, and I mean, that's a little heady, but what you're most passionate about just in your normal life, if you can spend enough time and know yourself well enough to at least get some pretty good clarity there. And then you can find a job that aligns with that.
Yeah.
Then going to work is
it's like
the same as going, spending a day off, right? In many ways. And I have tried to do that where I can. And I try to find people who are doing that because those are the kind of people I want on my team as well.
And that's back to the passion, right? Because if you find that person, you have that passion and that passion can take you so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, one piece of advice that I was some constructive advice. I'm an engineer, you know, and engineer turned business person and seller. But one of my superpowers is structure.
Yeah.
I can be extremely structured, and that's super helpful sometimes. It can also be a weakness. Like, hey, you said there was only going to be 30 minutes for this. We took 30 minutes as we were at a team meeting or something.
Yeah.
Everybody in the room knew we needed to take an hour.
Yeah.
And yet, because it said 30 minutes up there, you shut it off and we moved on. And, you know, maybe just be a little bit more flexible in some cases. And that was something I needed to hear.
Yeah.
My wife had been telling me for years, but it took my team.
I think it's so funny, right? Because sometimes you don't want to hear it from your spouse or when you talk to your kids and saying, you know, this is what you should do, right? But if somebody else is telling you, it's not the parents to the kids, right? Then listen, right? So I think it's just the human of being, right? Who we are.
I agree. But that was important.
Yeah. No, I really like that. I really like that. So, okay, time for the last question out here. And I love this one because it's always like, what kind of advice would you give yourself, Chris, if you look like 10 years ago? And it's so sometimes it's easy to do this reflection and saying, oh, I should just have done that. But when you're in it, right, it is that mountain. Let's just like combine it all here that you're looking at. But when you have climbed it, right, and look back, you're like, okay, maybe that it wasn't that bad, right? But but looking back 10 years, maybe 15 years, what kind of advice?
Yeah. So I'll give you two. One is mine and one is my son's. Mine is actually right along the line. I kind of preempted it with my story just before. I would go back and tell myself, hey, and this kind of happened to me about 10 or 15 minutes, probably 15 years ago, where I was like, what do I really want to do?
Yeah.
And that's what I would go back and tell myself. I was like, maybe do that earlier. Life is too short, right, to spend the bulk of your career and life doing work that you don't love. We all have days we don't love. We all have portions of our job we don't love.
Yeah, yeah.
But and by the way, there are certain people on the planet who have no choice about what they can do. So I appreciate that and I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But I had a choice.
Yeah.
And I would tell myself, hey, be really careful how you're spending your time.
Yeah.
Make sure that you're not doing work that is largely stressful and hard, like hard in a negative way.
Yeah.
I love doing hard work. But if it's hard work around something you're passionate about, go do those things.
Yeah.
And just be careful not to wake up 40 years from now and realize, man, I shouldn't have spent all that time on stuff that I didn't love. That would kind of be my high level.
Yeah.
My son, who is only 25, you know, he's an aspiring film writer. And we were dialoguing about work and he's like, you know, I've really made it a goal of mine to my day job where I'm making money and I pay my bills. I'm working hard to keep that as stress-free as possible so that I have as much time to go spend on my art. And of course he wants to be wildly successful and make billions of dollars being a movie producer and all that. And I hope he can.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, you're so different than I was when I was your age, you know? But I think it's incredibly healthy.
Yeah. And be honest to yourself, right? I think that's impressive of being 25 and being that honest and know, you know, this is.
I think so too. Yeah, he could go work more. He could make more money right now, but he's actively choosing to invest in other things at the moment. And so we'll see how it works out for him, but I'm proud of him.
Oh, you should be proud of him. I'm proud of him. I haven't met him. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Chris, for sharing. I think, you know, the whole journey of, you know, big companies to smaller companies, you know, to learning about your passion and your skill of mountain climbing. I'm looking forward to get that picture, in 2027.
Okay.
Yeah. But thank you so much for sharing your, you know, about leadership. This was really valuable.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, Sana, spending some time with you. And thank you for inviting me to have a chat. And I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Today's conversation was a strong reminder that leadership is not about the environment you're in. It's about the choice you make inside it. Chris shared what he learned moving between large and smaller organizations and why autonomy requires judgment and how to lead with clarity when there's not a perfect playbook. If you're navigating, changing, scaling a team, or trying to move fast without losing alignment, this episode will stick with you. So follow the podcast, subscribe on YouTube, and share this episode with somebody who's leading through growth right now. And thanks for listening to Leadership Manufacturing. See you next time.